Christian Robitaille. You're coming from Liverpool, University. So welcome in Paris. You know. And the floor is yours. So 30 minutes.
Thank you. First, I would like to thank Nathalie Bull for organizing this very nice event and for kindly inviting me to present. I also want to thank both Nathalie Bull and Francesco Di Iorio for initiating this very important handbook on methodological individualism, which serves as the basis for this event. So the chapter I will present aims at reflecting on some of the very foundations of the methodological individualist tradition for social research. In particular, I will focus on the centrality of the actor's rationality for the explanation of social phenomena as understood by Austrian economist and social theorist Ludwig von Mises. Indeed, most people know Mises either as a classical liberal thinker or as an economist who contributed to our understanding of phenomena such as money, credit, the business cycle, or the problem of economic calculation in socialist economies. However, few are aware of his important contributions to the epistemology of the social sciences, and in particular of his theory of rationality. I will hence provide you with an overview of his insights on rationality and on how they allow us to make sense of social phenomena. Classical theories of rationality in the social sciences all share in common a few features stemming from Enlightenment thinking. Indeed, David Hume's famous dictum, quote, reason is and only ought not only to be the slave of the passions and can never pretend to any other office than to serve and obey them, end quote, has been taken seriously by political economists and other social scientists from the time Adam Smith began his study of moral sentiment up to the time Ludwig von Mises himself started to write on economics. Reason, in this perspective, is to be understood as instrumental, that is, as a tool used by individuals to attain their goals, which stem from desires determined by various passions. These passions themselves are unanalyzable by reason and are hence taken as given by political economists and other social scientists in their analyses. This notion of instrumental rationality is also strongly linked with the conception of actors as self-interested beings. Indeed, the function of reason is precisely to attempt to reach a goal determined in the last analysis by the actor's passions. Hence, reaching the goal is expected to alleviate the actor's suffering or to increase his pleasure. In other words, utilitarianism is also an important component of rational action in classical economics. Indeed, rationalism, in its classical conception, goes hand in hand with both instrumentalism and utilitarianism. These aspects of rationality are all present in Mises' work, as will become obvious in a moment. But there are also other elements in Mises' theory of rationality which are more original. These original insights stem from Mises' acceptance of Karl Menger's paradigm for the study of economics and from his desire to systematize it. Indeed, Mises is building a system for the study of the social sciences in general and of economics in particular. As such, even the elements he borrows from his eminent predecessors are reevaluated from the perspective of the logic of action itself, or what he called praxeology. For instance, Mises argued that some of these elements are no longer to be considered as mere assumptions, but rather as rigorously demonstrated truths that are presupposed by any proper social scientific investigation. In particular, rationality defined in an instrumental and utilitarian manner is conceived as inextricably linked to action and, as a consequence, as constituting a necessary feature of any social analysis. Let us now see how Mises proceeded to establish this. So, to Mises, the epistemological foundations on which the social sciences rest stem from the recognition of human action. Human thinking is not free-floating. It is indeed constrained by a few conditions. One of these conditions is that there is no thinking without acting. Mises writes, quote, reason and action are congeneric and homogeneous, two aspects of the same phenomenon, end quote. If it is quite clear that action cannot be detached from thoughts, it is important to stress that, to Mises, thoughts cannot be detached from action either. It is action that makes us able to distinguish ourselves from the external world, and as such, that makes our ability to think as autonomous beings susceptible to affect the world possible. This is why, according to Mises, the category of action must be understood as the ultimate foundation of our understanding, and consequently as the most basic category of social epistemology. Human knowledge is constrained by human action, epistemology by praxeology, according to Mises. Now, once the praxeological foundation of human knowledge is established, it is easier to understand Mises' conception of rationality. Indeed, this concept can be directly deduced from the a priori of human action, according to Mises. As a consequence, in his work, he always conceives of reason in terms of its links to action. In Human Action, for instance, he states, quote, "Human action is necessarily always rational. The term rational action is therefore pleonastic and must be rejected as such. When applied to the ultimate ends of action, the term rational and irrational are inappropriate and meaningless. The ultimate end of action is always the satisfaction of some desires of the acting man. Since nobody is in a position to substitute his own value judgments for those who of the acting individual, it is vain to pass judgment on other people's aims and volitions." End quote. It is worth unpacking this definition. Once again, rationality is inextricably linked to the category of action. This means that Mises gives a special meaning to rationality. Indeed, contrary to, for instance, Vilfredo Pareto's narrow and exclusive definition, which can be deduced from his distinction between logical and non-logical actions, the former being any action which can be objectively linked to the attainment of its goal, and the latter being any other action. So in contrast to that, Mises' rationality must be understood as being broader and more inclusive. Even so-called non-logical actions are considered rational so long as they are indeed action. To understand why Mises conceives of rationality in such a broad manner, it is important to address another insight that can be deduced from the a priori of action, that is, the subjective theory of value. Indeed, as the definition presented indicates, the only ultimate end which can be deduced from the fact of human action is the satisfaction of some desires. Adding any further specification would immediately make us leave the realm of transhistorical knowledge about action and enter either that of historical knowledge or that of normative evaluation. The former would require, as a consequence, further specifications about historical actors and their empirical context to assess what goals are were indeed pursued, and the latter would, according to Mises, make us leave the realm of science altogether to enter that of taste and personal ethics. But when treating of action as such, the truth is that social scientists can only consider the chosen end to be something which the actor considers valuable in order, in Mises' words, to remove uneasiness. What specific ends are perceived by some actors to remove uneasiness in their own lives cannot be judged a priori. There are hence no non-logical or irrational end to pursue from the point of view of a value-free social scientific investigation. Ends are simply non-rational, that is, they cannot be analyzed by reason. But the pursuit of any end is always rational in the sense that an actor will choose to pursue goals perceived as removing pain or increasing pleasure. All of this, as discussed earlier, was often accepted by classical political economists. We cannot judge an actor's ends as they are merely given by the human passions, and they hence escape the realm of rational consideration. However, and this is where his definition of rationality becomes more singular, Mises argues that there are also no non-logical or irrational means used to achieve these ends. Indeed, the ex post failure of a procedure employed does not mean that an actor did not believe, based on his knowledge and circumstances, that it would indeed succeed ex ante. On the contrary, the very fact that the actor employed this method and not another indicates that he believed it would likely succeed in attaining the goal sought. Otherwise, another method would have been used. As a consequence, every choice of means is indeed rational, according to Mises. Now, based on all this, we can once again see that Mises conceived of rationality as something which can simply never be detached from human action. Rationality is, one, instrumental, that is, can only be considered as a reflection about means and not about ultimate ends. It is too utilitarian, that is, it always seeks to remove some uneasiness by satisfying subjectively valued ends. And three, it is subjective, that is based on the actor's very own information and social and cognitive contexts. The first two aspects are taken from classical economics, but again, Mises attempts to ground them on more solid grounds by changing their status from that of mere assumptions to that of praxeological deductions. The last one, the subjective part, considerably broadens the concept when compared to what had been done by most of his predecessors. Now, there are some obvious advantages from the social scientific point of view in using such a broad definition of rationality. Indeed, instead of dismissing as irrational all actions or beliefs encountered in our study of social phenomena which do not conform to our very own cognitive or valuational framework, approaching them as enigmas which can eventually be understood by investigating the cognitive and valuational contexts of the actors involved may allow us to provide a better explanation of the intriguing phenomena in question. Mises gave the example of methods used by physicians to treat cancer over time. It illustrates quite clearly the scope of his conception of rationality in that it allows us to obtain a better understanding of initially perplexing phenomena such as why were physicians so ineffective 100 years ago, without simply dismissing their methods as the result of unfathomable irrational forces. They simply did their best given their social and cognitive context. To sum up this part, Mises' conception of rationality as a praxeological deduction is thus instrumental, utilitarian, and subjective. We have seen that its subjective element renders it broader than usual classical conceptions, as it leads social scientists to consider the instrumentality of the actor's thinking, not from the social scientist's point of view, or against objective criteria on cause and effect, but from the point of view of the actor's singular social context and cognitive context. Likewise, it is broader in the sense that the expected utility gained from the performance of the action is thought, again, not based on the points of view of the social scientists or on any objective, quantifiable, or material conception of self-interest, but based on the chosen goals of the actor. Hence, whatever the end chosen, whether it is linked with material well-being or to goals that logically imply making the actor materially poorer, such as self-sacrifice, the individual acts in accordance with his own self-interest broadly conceived because choosing to pursue that goal demonstrates an ex-ante preference for it being achieved over any other competing attainable goal. Now, all these remarks about rationality as a praxeological category are meant to constrain theoretical analyses in the social sciences. But Mises argued that there are two complementary manners to study the social world: theory or praxeology, that is, the transhistorical study of the form of action, and history, that is, the specifications study of actions leading to empirical phenomena. He even wrote, quote, "The fullness of reality can be mentally mastered only by a mind resorting both to the conception of praxeology and to the understanding of history," end quote. Obviously, according to him, the theoretical remarks about rationality made before must constrain any historical analysis as they constitute necessary transhistorical deductions from the a priori of human action. However, to paraphrase Mises in Kantian terms, if history is indeed blind without theory, praxeological concepts are empty without historical specifications. This means that the concept of rationality as a praxeological category constrains any historical analysis, but requires further empirical specifications when used to understand specific social phenomena. Hence, interpretations of historical data, which are merely using the constraints provided by praxeological laws and the laws of the natural sciences, remain insufficient. In the realm of historical understanding, then, we must attempt to understand what Mises calls thymological aspects to specific actions. To Mises, Thymology is the study of human motivations and their historical and social origins. It is the specific study of the emergence of ends in the means-ends relationship that constitutes action. Indeed, if ends must be taken as given to praxeological analysis because it looks at the transhistorical structure of action as such, it is, on the contrary, the task of thymology to build a catalogue of human traits aimed at delineating, quote, what we know about human value judgments, the actions determined by them, and the responses these actions arouse in other people, using experience either from introspection or from intercourse with other men, end quote. Thymology thus constitutes a set of additional tools of investigation, in addition to praxeology and descriptive history, for social scientists to understand historical social phenomena. But the question remains, what is this catalogue of human traits, and how can we use it for the study of concrete social phenomena? Here, Mises is less explicit than when discussing economic theory of praxeology. However, a good indication of what Mises had in mind can be inferred from the structure of his book, Theory and History. Indeed, right after introducing the discipline of thymology, Mises discusses the importance of ideal types in the historical understanding of empirical actions and motivations. It seems that, according to Mises, the catalogue of human traits resulting from introspective and interactionist bases of thymological knowledge is a set of ideal types which can be used in order for social scientists to gather a better understanding of concrete historical social phenomena. For the study of history, then, in addition to using praxeological constraints for their analyses, social scientists can use profitably the comprehensive methods of Verstehende sociology. In particular, the sociology of Max Weber was perceived as, by Mises as being of relevance to the study of historical issues. Now, Mises had some sharp criticism to address to the famous German sociologist. Indeed, if Mises thought of Weber as a great general historian, he also thought that his understanding of praxeological sciences such as economics was unsatisfactory. In an essay titled Sociology and History, dedicated entirely to addressing the problem with Weber's methods, Mises deals with two main issues. First, the application of ideal types to the study of theoretical or praxeological economics, and second, Weber's conception of rationality. I do not have the time here to properly address the first disagreement here and refer to the interested listener to the forthcoming chapter. I will focus on the second disagreement, which relates more directly to the conception of rationality in the social sciences, and I will then provide an argument about how both can be reconciled even within Mises' epistemological system. In his Economy and Society, Weber famously divided social action in four types, respectively guided by what he calls purposive rationality, value rationality, affect, and tradition. This is all rooted in Weber's quest for the meaning of action, which is thus rooted either in the utilitarian quest for satisfaction, the desire to conform to higher values, the emotions that impel us, or the social habits that we take for granted and do not put into question. Those motivations to act are, according to Mises, problematic in two ways. First, from a praxeological point of view, the distinction between purposive and value rationality is deemed confused by Mises. He thought, indeed, that social theory, as opposed to social history, aimed at providing transhistorical laws and categories of action. As values are always determined by a complex process that can only be understood historically, we must consider value as subjective in order to elaborate the transhistorical theory of action. If value is subjective from the point of view of a social theorist, then we cannot, as social theorists, make a clear-cut distinction between value rationality and purposive rationality. There are no laws of valuation other than that action requires valuing. Hence, valuing an increase in one's standards of living is no different from valuing a religious, deontological, or political view from the perspective of social theory. And again, the singular conception that Mises had about what constitutes theory. Actions based on either type of motivation preserve the same common logic or the same form. That was one problem with this type. typology that Weber came with, that Mises thought was problematic. Second, the other two social actions, affective and traditional, which are not considered as rational in Weber's typology, are nevertheless the result of thought processes, provided that they are not merely unconscious reactions, and hence cannot be considered otherwise than as rational, according to Mises. There is nevertheless a way to conciliate Mises and Weber on this topic. The previously mentioned fact that Mises discusses ideal types right after his description of thymology suggests that ideal types are considered to be tools of this historical discipline. As such, considering Weber's typology of social action as historical specifications about motivations to act can be partially consistent with Mises' own conception of rationality. Mises thought that rationality as a praxeological category constrains any historical understanding of specific actions. As such, even effective or traditional actions must be considered rational. But it requires little work to see that there are often good reasons to pursue affective passions or to resort to traditional ways of doing things. As rational types of social actions, then, they can be considered as historical specifications of motivations to act. It can indeed be useful for the historian or empirical social scientist to classify specific actions as traditional or affective. Likewise, distinguishing between actions aiming at improving one's wealth and actions aiming at conforming to one's conception of morality can be used by the historian or empirical social scientist who aims at gathering a specific understanding of specific events. Interpreting Weber's typology as part of Mises' thymology has the potential to conciliate both authors and to better understand how praxeological concepts of rationality in Mises can be operationalized in empirical or historical studies. Now, to conclude, Mises' conception of human rationality has a few implications for social scientists. First, it requires that the social scientist who is confronted with an intriguing phenomenon does not ask himself whether or not the phenomenon is the result of rational action, but rather how it is. Otherwise, the social scientist is not objectively analyzing society, but is merely imposing his or her own value judgments on the situation he or she aims to explain. Second, it requires the use of ideal types constrained by praxeological types in order to obtain a specific understanding of historical events and of historical evolution. In brief, theoretical rationality, in Mises' sense, constrains historical rationality. But historical rationality as a set of ideal types is what allows social scientists to obtain a specific understanding of social phenomena. Mises' conception of value makes it impossible for us to know exactly why historical actors came to value what they valued without some amount of speculation about which human trait was at play in this catalog of human traits that constitutes thymology. It is here that Weberian ideal types, as accentuation of such specific human traits, can become helpful. So thank you very much for your attention.